go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
I'm Ben, and today we're doing several different things. First off, we'd like to give a big shout-out to our super producer and our audio editor, Dylan Fagan, who is setting in for our compatriot Noel today. That's the first different thing. We have to, and before we move on, Scott, we have to think of a nickname.
Oh, boy. It might be. Can we wait till the end, maybe, to give him a nickname?
Okay, but this time we have to remember.
Yeah, that's the thing. We never remember to do this. So how about this? I'm going to write down nickname for Dylan. Okay.
Oh, good. Thank you for specifying.
Yeah, and I'm sure that won't get lost in my pile of notes here. So, hold Ben accountable if we don't do this.
Yeah, and you can follow up with any complaints about me by sending an email to jonathan.strickland@howstuffworks.com.
Great. That's an easy-to-remember address.
Yeah, so our second weird thing, at least right now, is that you and I are in a studio rather than a car.
Yeah, which is unusual for us because we have spent, countless hours together in that car.
Oh, man, yeah, so... That's the second unusual thing. Ladies and gentlemen, today we are going to explore our experience with Car Stuff's very first road trip, and what a road trip it was. This was not just a random, hey, I'd like to go to Birmingham, or, well, I've never been to the Pacific Ocean, or something like that. We went on a road rally. We went on a road trip with a mission.
Yeah, with Rally North America. It was the Ohio Valley 700, and it was over the end of September, the early part of October, for those that are listening later in the future. And it was, from Hershey, Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. all the way to Athens, Ohio, with a bunch of stops in between, which we'll talk about. And Ben, you know what? We should first mention this.
What's that?
We kind of promoted this ahead of time. You know, we said that we were going to be part of this. And so we had, our team set up a donation page for CURE, which is Citizens United for Research in Epilepsy. And we set up that donation page, and, we donated ourselves, to get into the rally, et cetera, to make our contributions. And we also asked listeners to stop by and pitch in a little bit. And, man, did they ever pitch in.
Isn't that crazy?
We had a lot of people that donated, and I was just so pleasantly pleased by that. I mean, pleasantly pleased? Is that right? I can't say that.
You can be unpleasantly pleased.
I was going to say pleasantly surprised, but then I'm not really surprised. We have a great audience, good listeners, and they stopped by and really pitched in, so I was happy.
Well, here's the thing, Scott. I was over the moon, and personally, I was very surprised. Not because our listeners are anything but astonishing people, but more so because, as you guys know, if you've heard any previous episodes, I am cartoonishly cheap. You know, like, it really takes some time and deep thought for me to spend any money, whether it's buying a toaster or contributing to a greater cause, which is what CURE is. And with that in mind, I don't know if there's a way we can thank people enough, because our team continued getting donations while we were on the rally, and all in all, the event itself raised over $25,000.
Yeah, $25,000 additional. So that means that Rally North America as a group to this point, because they've raised money for epilepsy before, they are now over $100,000 for epilepsy research alone, or the CURE alone, and all combined, I guess, they're approaching around $700,000 for, charities of all kind, whether it's the Sunshine House or, Hope for the Warriors or, all the other different charities that they've been providing for over the past years you're running these rallies for. But again, $25,000 from just this one rally alone, I think that's really good. And our team alone, our team, and we weren't by any means one of the highest teams, we were right solidly in the middle. We did really well. As of today, I checked this morning, we have $1,033 on our donation page for Team Car Stuff.
And this is money that goes directly to the charity.
Yeah, entirely to the charity. Doesn't go to Rally North America or anything like that. No, that's a separate thing for the rally guys, and to get the thing set up and all the administrative stuff. But the money that you guys raise goes directly to the cure for epilepsy. So great job, everybody, and we appreciate it. And you know what, Ben? I'm thinking, and this is, again, maybe a little bit of inside stuff, but I've talked with enough listeners about this that I feel that it's already out there. We've been having a little trouble with our publishing here. We moved our publishing tool in-house, and I found out just yesterday that, or a couple days ago, this is in the future, by the way, so they know by now, there's been a little trouble getting stuff onto iTunes, and it publishes everywhere else. Our podcast too, published everywhere else. So while we were on that rally, the one that we were using to kind of promote that rally wasn't even released on iTunes. It was released everywhere else but there. So that came out a little bit later, and the whole reason was because I used a special character in the title. So we're going to get all this figured out, and we'll get it straightened out. But there's been a lot of back and forth between me and listeners trying to figure out why episodes are publishing late or not appearing at all on iTunes, and that's the reason. We're gonna get it straightened out, I promise. But again, $1,033, and I think donations are still coming in, so we may top that amount. And if we get up any higher than that, I'll let you know along the way. But maybe we should talk about, you know, what happened exactly, because this was a 6-day thing for us. It's a 3-day rally, but it was 6 days for us.
Yes, absolutely. Let's start with just a rough look at what we did and an overview of the days. Consider this the table of contents of the days. So the rally officially begins on September 30th in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Yes, that Hershey, Pennsylvania, the home of the Hershey Chocolate Company. And when the weather is right, it actually does smell slightly of chocolate.
Chocolate capital of the known universe. That's what they go by. No, they don't. I'm just joking. That's it. But let's just call it that.
So here's the thing. It started on Friday, but there was a meeting for the rally, the kind of kickoff for the driver's meeting, reviewing the rules, a charitable auction, meet and greet, stuff like that, on Thursday, which would be the September the 29th. That was also in Hershey, Pennsylvania. So on Wednesday, September the 28th, Scott and I joined forces with our producer, Noel, who you remember from previous episodes, and our co-worker slash cinematographic. Can I say it that way?
I think maybe not. Go ahead. You can say it that way. Oh, we all know what you mean.
Our visual guru.
That's better.
Our camera sorcerer, Casey Pegram, who would probably be slightly miffed by me calling him that.
Yeah, he's probably got way more fancier titles than that.
I know, right? But they joined forces with us, and so we took our first leg of the trip from Atlanta, Georgia, to Hershey, Pennsylvania, and we left at a decent time, but circumstances conspired against us, and we got there at about
4:30 in the morning.
4:30 in the morning, but there was a lot of stuff that happened on the way.
All right. So this is, you know, again, we'll call this day zero of the trip, right? The travel day. So it's a good thing that we left when we did, because I kind of think we were almost considering leaving on Thursday the 29th and getting there, you know, just before the meeting, early on. I mean,
leaving
maybe the
very, very early.
Early on in these meetings. But then we decided that it might be better just to get there ahead of time and have, you know, the day to do some things around town and kind of get into the groove of things and I guess relax, right, Ben?
Yeah, and kick our feet up.
Which is a laugh now that we're thinking about it. But so back to Wednesday, the day we decided to travel, the one day ahead of time.
Oh,
so
boy.
I left my house at 6 in the morning, and I think everybody heard that we arrived at 4:30 in the morning the next day. So that is 22 and a half hours in the car. I don't know if I've ever spent that much time in the car, you know, without sleeping in between, you know, like taking a break on the side of the road or going to a hotel or whatever. But that was 22 and a half solid hours, and you guys were not far off on that either, because I drove around to pick everybody up in the morning.
Around 7.
Yeah, around 7, 7:30, somewhere in there. So everybody was in the same ballpark. I mean, 21, 22, 22 and a half, whatever. It's all very close. Doesn't matter. It was quite a trip. I mean, we had a little trouble getting out of town. We went back out to where we were originally on the road and stopped and had, just to give you an idea, we had dinner near where we had breakfast. and we got back on the road, and I had been driving to this point, and that was almost, I had been driving for like 10 hours at this point.
Right.
And we're barely out of town.
Yeah.
So Ben took over, and almost immediately after Ben took over, about 30 minutes after that, it started pouring rain. And I mean, like, hard, hard rain.
Wipers, a deluge.
Yeah, wipers can't keep up kind of rain.
The the water that's already on the ground doesn't have enough time to move in some places. So we were in flood danger areas, you know.
This started around 5:30 or 6 p.m. the night before, and it went for 10 solid hours. And as it got darker and darker, we're getting into the Appalachian Mountains.
Yeah, it's very mountainous terrain.
Very mountainous, and it was foggy. I mean, so foggy you could barely see the car in front of you with this pouring rain. So you drove through some of the hardest time, I guess, on the way there for sure. Difficult shift for you. I don't envy you at all. Not only that, you're trying to stay awake at, 4 in the morning or 3 in the morning or, all those hours.
It was great, though. It cleared up a little bit as we got to, as we broke through Maryland, we're going through Pennsylvania, because we were in Maryland for about 15 minutes, and I was being such a jerk about it because, again, it was 3 in the morning. So we drove through just this very, very small part of Maryland.
Yeah.
And so we spent 15 minutes in Maryland, and I think that's enough for me.
Now, again, this is supposed to be a trip that's like 11 and a half hours, right?
Right.
Or something like that. Ballpark 11 and a half to 12 hours.
So the question is, what happened? And the answer is that we did have to turn around to get some equipment.
Yeah.
We did run into some traffic. One of the biggest things, however, was that continual storm because of the mountainous terrain and the driving conditions. And the semis, you always know it's kind of a bad sign if you're driving and then you see a bunch of the semis, the pro truckers, pulling over right outside of the way station to just sit this one out.
Yeah.
And we watched them and we kept driving.
They decided that they were not going to risk it, but we carried on. We had to get there, right?
It was also my first time driving your car. What a kick in the pants, man.
I know. It was a little rough. So you got a better feel for that later on in the trip, which we'll talk about. But
right.
This is the other thing, is that we get into town at 4:30 in the morning. Well, a couple things here.
Yeah.
When we roll into the lobby of the hotel, a couple of the other ralliers were still out celebrating from the night before and wanted to know if we wanted to join them. And we were like, oh, no, there's no way we can do that right now. But so we went ahead and got into our rooms. I had to send an email to Mr. Glenn Beck and a lady named Nancy Gates over at the AACA Museum in Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Antique Automobile Club of America.
Yeah, that's a beautiful museum, by the way.
Yeah.
But we had a 9:30 a.m. media tour scheduled that day. And I knew that with less than 4 hours of sleep, there's no way that we were going to be able to do that at that hour. So I had to cancel that at about 5 in the morning, 4 hours ahead of time. I felt terrible about that. But Glenn got in contact with Nancy later on, and we did arrange to get that tour taken the next day. So, we're there in Hershey, woke up, midday, had lunch, went out to this tour, had a wonderful time at that museum. Again, Nancy Gates gave us she's the director of marketing and publicity, by the way, over there at the AACA. And they've got a fantastic display. I don't know, I guess collection, maybe. That's
it's absolutely beautiful.
It really is. And it's not like it's overflowing with cars. I mean, there's a lot of cars there, but not like just jam-packed with cars like you might expect. They all tell a story. They're all historically significant in some way and all very beautiful. It's a remarkable place.
And they're curated, so we could do an entire episode just on this museum. The best way to put it, perhaps, is that we didn't get to see everything we wanted to see, so let's briefly walk through some of the big points, the premieres. They have cars that a lot of people will not see in their lives outside of a Concours event. So there's a Pierce Arrow there with silver rather than chrome on the vehicle, just to give you a sense of the elitism there.
Yeah, and that one was owned by a studio. I think it was Paramount Studios.
Yeah.
And they would use it to transport Hollywood stars back and forth between the mansions in the hills and the studio. So I think it had something. There had something with that one, like it had a truck transmission or something like that, so they could climb the hills.
It also had some privacy considerations when the windows were customized.
Yeah,
and
silk curtains.
Yeah, and then we also saw several rare cars. One thing they did that was really neat, and you should take your time to see it if you're in the Pennsylvania area. They curated antique vehicles by their age, by their chronology, and then their geography as well. So they sort of started at one end of the continent and then went in these increments across. And then they had other, they were about cars in the context of culture. What, and that's part of what Scott's talking about when he says a, when he says they tell a story, you know. There were also numerous examples of mods versus bikers.
Oh yeah, the rockers, I guess.
The rockers,
right?
Yeah, so that whole culture.
So you know, rock and roll stars that own motorcycles and modified scooters and bikes, and they had historic off-roaders, which was really cool. That was a great exhibit.
Yeah.
A lot of really interesting stuff there. Oh, the Tuckers that they had there.
They have the world's largest Tucker exhibit.
Yeah, and how many would you guess is in the world's largest exhibit of Tuckers?
We'll give you a second.
The answer is three.
Three.
Yeah, three Tuckers, and that constitutes the world's largest gathering or collection of Tuckers in one place. So
now, keep in mind, there are only around 50 of those made to begin with.
Yeah, it's very impressive to see in person. It really is. And not only that, the display of engines that they have there, you know, the whether it's prototype engines or chassis, they've got all kinds of stuff. They had the barn door from the Tucker farm you know, it was something that was donated by the family themselves. They know it's authentic. They had countless, well, they don't have these on display yet, but they have countless blueprint drawings that are from Tucker. And they
schematics.
All kinds of stuff. Factory drawings, you know, whatever. Everything. Thousands of them. They're going to digitize those and then eventually put them on display.
Which will be great. They'll have stuff where you can see physical copies under glass, but the digital displays will hopefully be accessible from anyone with an internet connection.
And this is, a couple things. Geez, there's more to this. So we're still at the museum. We haven't even started the rally yet, but we're at this museum and she takes us to this one floor. There's three floors, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Takes us to one floor, and it's full of buses.
Ah, yes. Okay. I did a little bit of digging into this. So there's a fleet of buses. I'm sorry, Scott. I'm still kind of in the Tucker world, but I have to stop myself because we did a three-part episode on Tucker, a three-part series.
Oh, yeah. Did I miss some things?
No. I'm sure they're all in the episode.
Okay.
You guys know I'm a huge fan of Preston Tucker, and I do believe the conspiracy theory that he was shut down by the big three.
Yeah.
Anyway, you can hear us rant about that in our audio podcast available at carstuffshow.com.
Very nice.
Yeah, nice segue, right? Especially when it pointed out.
Very smooth.
Anyway, these buses, dude, they're fantastic. Okay, some of them are significant in that they show the lineage of custom coachwork that still kind of exists in these buses at the time. And these come from an era when people weren't flying. So a lot of the things in some of these older buses will resemble the stuff you would expect from an airline today, like a meal service, you know, a uniformed staff, a steward or stewardess.
Only far more comfortable and with more room in between. Like, it just seems like a better setup. It's like I guess it would be like flying the airlines of old, you know, where there's actual, you know, shoulder room and space in the seat, and they've got footrests that can pull out, you know, that from the seat below you. Very cushy. They've got curtains on the windows.
They've got kitchens.
Overhead storage that has, you know, again, curtains and ropes and things to keep everything in place. And, yeah, kitchens in the back, of course, you know, restroom facilities. But carpet is really, really plush and very nice and everything. It's just it's an amazing time capsule when you get inside one of these. And that's the cool thing is that Nancy opened the ropes on a couple of these and allowed our crew, the four of us, to get in and sit down in these buses. And we kind of picked and chose, you know, which ones we wanted, or pick and chose which ones we wanted. And we sat in maybe four or five different buses and had a good time. I mean, we were sitting in the driver's seat, you know, with those big flat steering wheels that sit in front of you, the 25-inch steering wheel.
Yeah.
And kind of wheel that around a little bit. You get the real feel for what it must have been like to you know, pilot that thing.
Pilot, I think, is a correct word
It was unreal. They were so beautiful inside. I mean, the woodwork and the fabrics and everything it's a real time capsule.
So the other category of buses that would be there were things like the bus that appears in Forrest Gump when Forrest, I believe, is riding back home from the events in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I got a chip on my shoulder about spoilers. I I'm not going to give any spoilers for Forrest Gump, but in my opinion, there should be a limit. There should be a statute of limitations for what is considered a spoiler.
Yeah, Forrest Gump, that's a movie's like 15 years old or more, isn't it?
Yeah, and where's the line? Where's the line with spoilers, Scott? I got someone got irritated on a different show I do because they felt that one of my co-hosts spoiled a TV show called Lost for them.
Come
on. I wrote
a
very polite letter back, right?
Yeah.
And I said, okay, I understand, but is there a statute of limitations? What do you think it should be? Like, is it a spoiler to say that Abraham Lincoln is assassinated? Is it a spoiler to say that Santa Claus isn't real? That's the main spoiler most people get in the West.
Ben, what are you talking about?
Scott, I'm sorry you had to learn about
way. Listen, I'm forever going to believe in the big man.
The big man?
Yeah, the big man in the big red suit.
The big man suit.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think it's a conspiracy theory.
I'm a believer.
Anyway, spoilers aside for Forrest Gump, the buses were amazing. We were able to go into them and to some degree experience or get a sense of what it was like to operate or be a patron of one of these buses. But there were other very, very cool things there. There were Packards. There were also like a Packard work truck was also there. Because they had an SUV exhibit, an all-terrain vehicle exhibit. And one thing that I thought you particularly enjoyed was the bootlegger's hearse.
Yeah, the bootlegger's hearse. And they held, and you'll have to appreciate the play on words here, but they had spirits in the coffin that was in the back of this thing. Cool. Yeah. And it was, of course, one of these huge coach-like, a very ornate hearse. I don't remember the make and model. I have to dig up my photos because I took lots of photos while I was there, so there's plenty of that to go around.
Mm-hmm.
And then one last thing about this museum.
Yeah.
We got a sneak peek at an upcoming exhibit, something that's going to happen maybe even as this podcast is being released.
Oh, yeah. Can we say anything about that?
I think so. It's the Route 66 exhibit. And
yeah.
They know it's coming. It's just no one's really seen the cars that are going to be involved with it, but we have. They were in the basement. They were being, I guess, readied for the mm-hmm. exhibit getting in place. So, Herbie was there. Herbie the Love Bug, one of the 10 original Herbie the Love Bug vehicles used in the movie.
Boy, he got banged up.
Man, there were brass era cars that were just piled up down there practically. I mean, there must have been, I'm going to ballpark this, 8 or 10 brass era cars that were in mint condition, perfect shape.
There was a rickshaw.
That's right. There's a Prowler go-kart.
Uh-huh.
There's all kinds of really cool stuff down there. And I'm not going to give away what's going to be in the Route 66 exhibit or anything. I mean, you can go look at that for yourself. But there were a bunch of cars down there that were ready for that and very, very impressive. So we had a great time. Thank you again, Nancy, for that. And really, anybody that's in that area, in the Hershey, Pennsylvania area, check out the AACA Museum. It's unbelievable. And they're constantly changing exhibits. So there's never a bad time to go, really.
And expect more from us about that museum in the near to mid future.
Yeah. Now, the rest of the group went on that tour
the following day.
So they all got to see it as well. And we had already been on that, so we were able to show up a little bit later, thankfully, and take our place in line. But first, we thought we were going to go to the Carlisle Swap Meet, which is in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, on that same day. But again, that persistent rain was keeping us out of that because it's a huge event. That's like an 80-plus acre swap event, you know, where they have an auction and all kinds of stuff happening and a car corral. I would have loved to have seen that. That was something I was really, really excited about. But again, with our late arrival, then the tour in the middle of the day, plus that rain, there's just no way we could have done it because it just never let up. It was raining, like a steady rain all day, not downpour like when you're driving, but close.
We had to choose between one.
Yeah, and of course, you know, Glenn Beck was along with us for all that, and we thank him also for kind of setting that up with Nancy. So
yeah, that was so cool, man.
Really, really cool. And so we went to the driver's meeting, which we thought was going to be at the hotel. And we hadn't been watching there's a Rally North America page that's a special page for the people that are participating in the rally. And we hadn't been monitoring that. And we thought that it was going to be in the lobby of the hotel we were staying in. So we go down there, you know, 10, 15 minutes ahead of time, and no one's there, and no cars are there. So we realized, I went and asked at the front desk, and she said, oh, no, that's outside of town here at, wherever. And she told me
there
where.
There was one other car that was still there.
Yeah, they rode with somebody else there, that's all.
Well, all right. But
we were the last ones.
Sure.
So we go, we head out, we took a wrong turn, of course, and ended up about 10 minutes late to the driver's meeting. Totally embarrassed first day, but we walked in and everything was fine. It worked out okay. We knew the rules because we had read them ahead of time on the website, but we got the specifics about, you know, what to watch out for, what you know, what to expect the next day in general. Not exactly all together.
And I'm, by the way, I'm filing this under some of our lessons learned and advice for people who choose to take a, who choose to go on a road rally in the future.
And what's that?
Well, I'll give this at the end.
Oh, okay.
It's a summation.
Okay, I see. So we walk in, and you know, we're standing at the back of the room at the meeting because we didn't get a chair because we were last in, of course. And all the drivers are there. All the cars are parked out in the parking lot. And first time we've seen all of them together, really. It was pretty impressive. And as we're standing there, you know, they announced that we're they announced that we're here, and you know, team car stuff. And Don, one of the rally drivers, flips something over to Ben real quick. It's like a little charm thing, right?
Yeah.
What was it?
It's a tiny rubber pig with its head facing upwards and its mouth open, its snout pointed as though it is howling at the moon.
Yeah, and we thought, well, this is unusual. But we said, well, thank you. You know, we knew Don. And we said, well, okay, thanks a lot. We had no idea what the significance of this was.
I mean, people throw pig things at me all the time.
Is that right?
Bacon.
Oh, that's
chicharrones.
Not bad.
This is weird. So we couldn't say anything immediately because we hadn't talked about it yet. But as Don was walking by, I think he got up to move something around or whatever. He said, you know, this is a lucky rally pig. And he's like, keep it in your car for good luck. Yeah. And I'm notoriously bad at holding on to things, but I took special precautions to make sure we didn't lose it. And we didn't realize until the auction began. People will have an auction where they bid on stuff. And again, just like the racing donations, all the money goes to charity. And what we found out was that this pig, because only a few teams have one, this pig is a big deal. And we lucked into one on our very first night, whereas other teams have been racing for a couple different times and still haven't had one. Somebody auctioned off a pumpkin pie, and because it had a pig, it went for, like, what, $80?
Something like $80. Yeah. Okay, here's the deal. They auctioned off a pie ahead of time, like a cherry pie or something.
Yeah.
And somebody had made, and it was like $10 or $12 or something like that. Not great, but it's, you know, still some money for the charity.
Yeah.
So they do that, and then the next one is a pumpkin pie, but they threw in a rally pig, and again, like Ben said, $80. So that gives you an idea of what the pig adds to the value of this item, right? So they did that for a few things. And I'll tell you, consistently, when they threw a rally pig on this, you know, as a good luck symbol,
yeah.
It would up the price by like $60 or $65 on many, many items.
Yeah, you remember, okay, I was thinking about, this is the perfect film moment that compares to this. Do you remember Ghostbusters 2?
Yes.
Okay. Viggo the Carpathian, all that. Ugh, sorry, spoilers, everybody. But so there's the scene when they're figuring out how to get into the museum where the cursed painting is, and they all kind of look at each other, the four of them, and then they end up staring at the Statue of Liberty on that on the license plate.
Yeah,
that's the moment we had with that pig at the auction.
It was, because we were looking at, like, we held out the pig and we're like, well, this is one of those right now. Don just gave us one. So Don, thank you so much. We had no idea what you were actually handing us at the moment, but we soon came to understand, and it was it's a cherished member of the team.
Right. So then we were told we would meet in the morning at the AACA Museum for the lineup and rally to begin. Because of donations from listeners like you, we were actually given a slight edge in the rally. We were 19 out of the first 22, and that's out of 50-ish.
Yeah, out of, like, I think it's like 50, 52 teams, something like that, 53 maybe. Again, number 19, and that allowed us to line up early every day to get out on the road and kind of get a little jump on things. And that's because of money raised early on. There was a cutoff point, and to that point, we were number 19 in the standings. We didn't expect to get anything, really. We were just standing in the back, not really thinking we were going to even place, but we did, because we were late entry. And again, I got to thank Scott and Tony from Rally North America for allowing us to slot in there late, because I know that's kind of past the cutoff, but they allowed us to do it anyway.
We sure appreciate it, guys. So we go to sleep. We're in preparation for the rally. We are not completely sure how the mechanics of it will work. Here's what happens. As we take off, we get something called, we get what we'll call a checkpoint card. A route card, route card, points of interest. And this has the following display. It says, day one, scavenger hunt items. And we have a checkpoint that is very easy. It's a checkpoint for a place called CJ Pony Parts. And we didn't understand at first, you know, how this all worked. But when we got to CJ Pony Parts, we saw that we had some items on our scavenger hunt that would apply here. So the scavenger hunt, the way it goes is that we have about 16 items that we can hunt. And these items ultimately are pieces of Americana.
How about we list just a few so people get an idea of what we're looking for? Just kind of a general idea.
Here's the easiest one.
Okay.
Your team or car in front of neon signs, working or not.
Mm-hmm.
Here's one that was a little bit harder. Your team or car in front of a hotel cottage with the owner's permission.
Mm-hmm.
And these are ranked in different points. So for the neon signs, for instance, you get 15 points for each one, and you can only do that 6 times. For the hotel cottage, you get 100 points for each one, but you can only do it twice.
Okay, and in addition to this card, which has several more, I don't know if you want to read any more or not.
Let's see.
Maybe a couple more.
Your car parked at a roadside bar or restaurant with no less than 4 bikers and 2 motorcycles in the background. Or your team or car in front of a sign that features Lincoln's head.
Okay, or the Lincoln Highway Roadside Giants.
Yeah.
That's another one. So we were on the Lincoln Highway. We'll talk about Lincoln Highway in just a minute. But along with that, we received a pamphlet that had the checkpoints.
Right. When we got to our first place, CJ Pony Parts, we got a pamphlet.
Yeah, so there's a card that they hand you and then a pamphlet with these checkpoints. And all checkpoints are worth 200 points. So just to give you an idea, for day one, there are 8 checkpoints. And, you know, CJ Pony Parts being the first one, which is a place just outside of town there in Hershey. And checkpoint number 2 was a 198-year-old toll house on the Lincoln Highway, right?
Yeah.
And then the next checkpoint 3 was, it was a haunted location. It was a haunted home.
Union Hotel.
The Union Hotel, that's right. And then checkpoint 4 was the giant coffee pot, which is kind of a historic, it's a marker, I guess. You know, it's in Bedford, Pennsylvania, if you want to look it up. Built in 1927. They moved it in 2003. There's a lot to all this stuff we can maybe talk about in a minute. But you get the idea, right? Mm-hmm. Another one is like you gotta find this bison farm and take a photo of your car and your team in front of live bison out in the field.
Yeah,
that was an interesting one.
The last two were relatively somber.
Yeah, that's right. It was the Flight 93 Memorial out in the field, out in the middle of nowhere, really.
Where the flight crashed.
Yeah, the 9/11 flight. So that was, man, well, you know what? Should we talk about that in just a minute? Okay, we'll get back to this in a moment. But we were still trying to figure out all the way this whole thing worked, really. And we were lucky enough to, of course, know Glenn Beck, and he said he gave us a quick text message and said, "Hey, why don't you head on over to the diner across the street from CJ Pony Parts?" And we're all sitting down and trying to figure out some of the clues. And we thought, "Oh, this is exactly what we need," because we had really no idea exactly how we were going to map all this out and where to go to. So we went over there, and it was Glenn and Don and Tim and a bunch of guys sitting around the table. Guys and some their wives were with them as well, and just Danielle was there. A lot of people sitting around the table, just really going through booklets of information that they had already, like, you know, pre-researched on this route. And not that they had the clues ahead of time, but they had an idea of, you know, where we were in the history of the area, so they knew what these clues or these not really riddles, but these clues were sort of pointing to.
They can make educated guesses based on what. Based on probabilities.
Very smart. Those guys were very smart. They had it all laid out, and they did it all right in order, and for maximum points. And you know, the only wild card, I guess, would be some of these things that you mentioned on the card along the way: the neon signs, the mile markers, things like that. Those are a little tougher to come by, but you see them and just have to make an immediate decision to pull over
and some of the things that require you to exit the car and travel on foot for some amount of time.
That was something that on the first day. landed on Ben's shoulders. And, man, when we got to that Flight 93 memorial, you must have run a half a mile each direction to get to that. That was the end of the day.
Well, that's the thing. You can't, at a memorial like that, I do believe it's disrespectful to run. So I was okay with it in the parking lot.
Yeah.
And then on the way out to the parking lot, but, you know.
Had to show some respect on the way. I totally get it. I understand. But I tell you what, let's talk about that Flight 93 memorial, because that was something that was a standout on that day as far as we just didn't know what to expect when we went there. It's, again, in the middle of a field.
And it's a huge structure. It still isn't done. I would compare it aesthetically to the approach taken at the Vietnam Memorial, because the structure itself works with the land and focuses the wind in a way that is surprising and I think is purposeful. And there's an overhang that we went to where you can survey the entire site, and then if you go down, there's another I guess path or structure that leads out to another, another edifice.
Well, the actual crash site.
Yeah.
Yeah, the top one is more of an overlook, as you said, and that's the one that all of us went to. And Ben, when we got down to the bottom, that's the one that you went to up to the gate and took the second photo, because there were two photos required at that location. And I think we all agreed that we would have liked to have spent about a half a day there, because it was really, really nice. We didn't get nearly enough time to spend there, because we had to get back for our check-in. But really an interesting site. It's definitely worth going to if you're, again, in that area. And it's very somber, very solemn, but also really, really beautiful at the same time. I'm just impressed with the whole thing. The way they've laid that whole thing out is just it was not what we expected, and, I guess a big surprise, but a good surprise.
Mm-hmm.
All right, probably enough of that. Let's move on. So the end of the day, we had to total up our Ben, we can't really move on to the final checkpoint yet, because there's a couple of quick things I want to mention. One would be the roadside giants, which were all along the Lincoln Highway.
Oh, yeah, and there's some official ones, too.
And so they're like cars, and I don't know, what were the other ones?
There were cars, there were physical giants, like a giant elf character that we stopped by, and we were tasked to find, I think, five of them, or five or six, but we had to start triaging and prioritizing what we would hit next.
Yeah. Because we had to be back by 6 p.m.
You have to be back by 6 p.m. to qualify. Many people were not, as we came to learn. But there's another thing that I know you want to mention, and that's the motor court.
Yeah, the Lincoln Motor Court. Now, this is right on the Lincoln Highway, as most of our travel was that day. Mm-hmm. And Lincoln Highway, if you don't know about that, that's almost a podcast in itself, really.
It totally is. We should save some for it.
Okay, well, what do we want to say about it? Here's just real general knowledge of it. So this goes through the area that we were in, and we were on it for a long, long time, but this is a giant road. This is it's 3,389 miles, and that was in 1913. That's the length of it. It goes all the way from Times Square, New York, to Lincoln Park in San Francisco. That was the primary route across the United States, east to west or west to east. Mm-hmm. And later, not much later, as a matter of fact, they built the interstate system, and Interstate 80 became the primary highway for that exact route. So just as the old yarn goes, I guess, or the old saw that, when the new highway went through, kind of shut down these smaller towns and some of the industries along the way. Well, one that survived this whole time was the Lincoln Motor Court. And the Lincoln Motor Court is, I think it's the person that was running this. I can't remember her name. Do you remember her name?
Debbie.
Now, Debbie was super helpful.
It may well be, and she told us it may well be the last of its kind.
I think it is the last of its kind.
She's been there for 34 years?
Yeah, since 1983, and that was when they changed ownership, I guess. That's when the new owner took over, and that was her, Debbie. And, again, 34 years. And this is a pre-World War II era cottage, and a series of cottages, I guess, in this motor court. You drive through and you park in front of your own little tiny cottage, and it's not much bigger than the studio that we're recording in, which is very small, very, very small. But it's like, again, I said this before, but it's like walking into a time capsule. It looks like you're in late 1930s, 1940 America. Everything about it, everything that they placed on the desks, all the woodwork inside there, the tile, the colors, and everything. It's just exactly like it would be pre-World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful places. The outsides are covered with like that asphalt shingle material. It looks, and the chairs outside, you know, the lawn chairs are like the old style chairs like you'd find in the 1940s. It's very authentic, I guess, in the way that they have the whole thing set up, and it's really, really cool. Again, it's the only one on the entire Lincoln Highway that is open to overnight guests. And just to give you an idea of how many of these were around and how few are now, of course, just this one.
Yeah.
The modern one, they have modern versions of this, but you said they're mostly, individual units that they drop in place, like prefab units that they put in, and they're almost like storage units, really, that you sleep in, really. Strange, different thing, but
yeah.
These are all original, and at one time, just in that one county that we were in, Bedford County, Pennsylvania, there were 13 of those motor courts in that one county alone back in the day. Go ahead.
I have to interject this before you get too far away from it. It's similar to the prefabricated diner that we encountered at the AACA Museum, because people were very into transporting something by rail or semi and depositing it. So there was a time in the U.S., and this was spectacular to some of my friends who always wanted to open a restaurant, wherein you could contact a company that would ship a diner to you, an entire diner in a crate. Now, obviously not a big one, but entire diner in the crate. It would either be about the size of one of maybe a studio apartment up to maybe the size of a trailer. And what you would do is you would take your first dollar that you made and you would deposit it, and then they would send a company guy to come collect it, and you would just keep depositing a portion of that money until you paid off the diner.
So at $30 a month, you would pay for the diner over a period of many, many years. And
right.
And again, they drop it onto a slab that had utilities there, you know, for hookup.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
Water and electrical, et cetera, plumbing. And that was it. I mean, it's like a turnkey diner. It was really remarkable. Very, 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 very cool. Had everything you need.
I just wanted to mention that because part of what we're seeing, part of the purpose of at least this rally was to showcase parts of Americana or American culture that you just don't see from the interstate.
All right, so here we are. We're kind of trying to figure out or pick and choose our way through this list and make our arrival at the where were we headed to that night?
We were trying to arrive in Deep Creek, Maryland.
Yeah, so we're trying to get to Deep Creek, Maryland on that first night, and we missed it by 25 minutes.
We missed it by 25 minutes.
So our points didn't count, really.
No, they don't count unless you, which isn't that bad because you're just one of 52 teams, the majority of which, honestly, don't seem to be racing competitively.
Yeah,
they're doing it to win.
But the thing is, we were pretty competitive. We were really trying to get some points, and we were trying to do well that day.
Well, we were also handling an additional task that really kept us from being competitive in the race, which is that we were filming. And when
yeah.
you film, if you want to get something good, you have to stop. So whereas other crews were stopping for maybe 2-4 minutes at a checkpoint, we were there for 30 minutes to 40.
Yeah, because we were swapping batteries and we were changing mm-hmm. camera positions.
Which
and
is all necessary stuff.
Oh, absolutely necessary. So we were doing, wiring up microphones and just trying to figure out where we were going to go next and what we were going to see and so what would be the best position for the camera on the inside and the outside of the car. It was just, you're right, Ben, it was, 30 to 45 minute stops instead of the 3 or 4 minute stops. So we tried our best. I think we did very well with the points. And
sure.
We got quite a few at the end of the day, actually, but they just didn't count for anything at the end of the day because we were 25 minutes late.
Oh, man. Wait. Sorry. You know, my spider sense told me this might happen.
You're going to interrupt our rally episode?
I'm not interrupting it. I think we're going to have to make this a two-parter.
Oh, you're wise to do so, Ben.
I am not often accused of being wise, and I'll take it. Because we have so much more stuff to explore, as you can tell by the way we're talking about this, we're going to make this a two-part episode.
Yeah, and look forward to Dylan's nickname in the next episode.
We haven't forgotten.
No.
In the meantime, go ahead and let us know what you think of road rallies. If you have any ideas of places that you would like us to adventure toward in the future. Mm-hmm. That sounds weird, but you know what? Let's go with it.
Why not?
If you have recommendations for locations that
we should adventure toward.
Oh, great. That's going on my permanent record.
It's okay.
Then we'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, and you can email us directly. We are.
Well, there's way more on your permanent record than that. But we're carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
On this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.